degrees. I'm Rick Antley. This is NHPR News.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. This year marked the 30th birthday of New Hampshire Public Radio. It began in 1981 as simply WEVO serving the Concord area. Today, NHPR is a statewide network with transmitters all over New Hampshire and a major online presence, altogether attracting more than 170,000 weekly listeners. And for the past 6 years, our guest today has guided this growing ship, Betsy Gardella, NHPR President and CEO. Before coming to New Hampshire in 2005, Betsy held leadership roles at public radio station WNYC in New York and at American Public Media. One of the biggest tasks she's faced here is moving the station into the digital age, meeting the expectations of audiences who want high-quality programs available on demand via whatever media platform they choose. Today in The Exchange, we'll talk about that and much more as we sit down with Betsy Gardella to reflect on NHPR's past year and what's ahead for 2012. Let's hear from you, too. Where do you want to see this radio station go in the year ahead, whether in terms of the news and information offered or the way in which it's delivered? How has technology changed the way you access the news and the type of news you seek? Join us. It's your chance to talk to the president of the radio news service that you listen to. Give us a call. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR, or send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. And Betsy, nice to see you in the studio.
Well, Laura, it's great to be here.
Well, before we look at 2011, and there was so much that happened, let's just contemplate for a minute, if we could, 30 years of public broadcasting in the Granite State, 30 years of New Hampshire Public Radio. How would you say, Betsy, the station itself and public radio in general have changed over those three decades?
Oh, gosh.
It's huge, isn't it?
That's a big question, yeah. 30 years in New Hampshire, but more like 40 years for most other states. New Hampshire was one of the last states to get public radio. So we're catching up with our brethren, and we're doing actually really well. When we started off, and I was not here, but going back through our history, we only broadcast a few hours a day.
Oh, really? Wow!
And we aired the news magazines, Morning Edition, and All Things Considered, and we were dark much of the time, serving Concord only. And then we expanded to a 24-hour service and then began slowly to expand to serve a statewide audience. And that has been a big challenge. You know, I came here from Minnesota. You mentioned American Public Media. Minnesota is a flat state. You put up a transmitter and the signal goes forever. But we all know that we have a beautiful landscape here in New Hampshire, but the topography gives us a lot of problems. So we've worked really steadily to bring that service to listeners from Colebrook down to Nashua, from east to west. But that's been a big commitment over the last 30 years. And we still have some growth ahead of us.
In terms of
reaching there are parts of the state where I say, yeah, you can get the signal if you don't mind the static, because the mountains just get in the way. So, you know, that's something that's a challenge. We've also gone through some formatting changes over the last 30 years. At one time, we played a mix of classical music with the news programming, and as we added programs like The Exchange, and there's a tremendous appetite for talk content, we started adding more and more news and information programming into the schedule. Now, we made that change from what's called in the business a dual format to the news and information format in early 2001. Many stations that had dual formats changed to news after September 11th, because there was such a hunger for being connected with the news and information, not just in our local communities, but around the world. So we have seen that trend, and it's really, it's grown the audience. So I think it's told us that while people love a variety of programming, the news is what they most value.
And if you could talk, Betsy, about changing roles and perceptions of NHPR and NPR in terms of news. I would say 30 years ago, public radio in general was regarded as an alternative news source. You might hear some funky stories. Now it's really regarded as, for better or for worse, the mainstream media.
Right, right. No, it definitely is. There's a statistic that NPR uses that says something like more people listen to public radio every week than read the nation's top 174 newspapers.
Wow.
And this is a really professional network. This NPR has more international bureaus than anyone else.
Especially so in this era when foreign 17, bureaus are being cut.
17 international bureaus, which is just extraordinary. So we've really grown as a system. And you're right, we were absolutely fringe when we started. And I remember those early broadcasts. The story is that for All Things Considered, their first broadcast coincided with the March on Washington. So that sort of sets us in that time period where the birth of kind of a counterculture sensibility was just bubbling up. And NPR was there for that. They were in Washington. All Things Considered was the first show that NPR aired, and they covered that March on Washington in their very first broadcast. So it's so much fun to listen to the founding mothers, as they call themselves, Susan Stanberg and Nina Totenberg and Cokie Roberts, talk about those early days. And it's not the major network that it is today.
I want to fast forward to 2011 and here at New Hampshire Public Radio, Betsy, but also invite our listeners to join us. It's your chance to talk with the head of the radio news service that you listen to every day. So join us now, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Emails are great. The address is exchange@nhpr.org. And boy, 2011 has been a big year, Betsy, even though the economy has remained okay, not terrible in New Hampshire, not great. Lots of tasks and activities and challenges here at NHPR. Just go through the list for us, and then we'll pick apart what you say.
Well, I'll focus on some of the things that we have been working very hard on and that we're really excited have come to fruition in this year. Aside from the anniversaries, which we've celebrated, the 15th anniversary of the Exchange, the 30th anniversary of the station, we brought two new full-power signals onto the air this year, and these projects were a real commitment for me. When I first moved to New Hampshire in 2005, I spent the first year literally driving around the state and talking to our listeners to try and get a sense of what the service meant, how well we were providing coverage of their communities, just lots of informal. I talked to fire chiefs and college students and business owners and just everyone, that construction supervisors. You know, it was as random a group of New Hampshire residents as I could find. And it didn't take long to realize that the coverage up north was not good and that the folks up there were doing some phenomenal things in their community, and we needed more of a connection. The lower part of the state needed to know more about what was going on up north. And so we have spent, not over the last year, but we've completed the projects this year, we have spent about $850,000 strengthening our service in the North Country. Huge commitment for us. Somebody said to us, "You'll never get your money back. Why are you doing this?"
Because there's not enough people there.
And yes, and we said, well, if we were a commercial enterprise, we wouldn't be doing it. We're doing it because we're non-commercial. We have a mission, and our mission is to serve the state of New Hampshire. And someone said to me, the thing that gives me the most pride is when someone from Coos County calls into the exchange. And I know that I'm part of the statewide conversation. And I thought this is why we do this work. So we've upgraded the Colebrook translator to a full power station. It does reach up to Pittsburgh. And you can now, and we upgraded the Littleton transmitter. And so you can drive north and you get the signal all the way up. So we're really thrilled about that. In addition, we have a reporter who is based in the North Country. So you're hearing lots and lots of reports. In fact, Chris Jensen had a newscast piece on this morning. He's been doing a brilliant job, I think, bringing North Country stories to the state.
So that's a big area of expansion for NHPR in
2011. Tremendous, tremendous. I'd say the other thing that that we're very proud of is a project called State Impact. This is a partnership with NPR. New Hampshire Public Radio is one of eight groups in the country invited to participate in the pilot year of this project. And it is so timely for us in New Hampshire because it gives us a chance to focus on something very specific, the impact of decisions made at the State House on business and the economy in New Hampshire. So it is a beat. It establishes a beat for us, a business and economy beat, really understanding the relationship between state government and what actually happens in our communities. And it's allowed us to add two reporters to our newsroom, a broadcast reporter and a digital reporter. So if you've not been to the State Impact site, you can get there from nhpr.org or from the NPR website, because we're also sitting on NPR.org.
So NPR felt like this was a hole, basically, in its broader coverage of how state houses affect policy. NPR focuses so much on the federal government and Capitol Hill, but the state houses are making some real changes,
exactly,
too.
The national issues. And they thought this is a way that they can collaborate with stations, build that real relationship of trust and a collaborative spirit. You know, about 30% of what we hear in the magazine shows come from local stations. So this is a way to get, in a more formal way, these local stories onto the national air.
More after a short break, and we'll take your calls, so stay with us.
Support for NHPR comes from you, our members, from the NEEF Network Organizations, a statewide leader assisting students and parents planning for college. Information at nhheaf.org. And from thelobbynh.com, the new online source for New Hampshire business and politics, found at thelobbynh.com. More with NHPR President Betsy Gardella on The Exchange on NHPR and at 10 on The Diane Rehm Show, Biomedical Experiments and Public Safety. New Hampshire weather for today, partly to mostly sunny for most of the state, highs 45 to 50 degrees. Partly to mostly cloudy from the White Mountains north, highs near 40. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, NHPR's president, Betsy Gardella, joins us to talk about where the station has been over the past year and where we might go in 2012. We invite you to join us at 1-800-892-6477. Where do you want to see this radio service go in the year ahead, whether it's the type of news and information that we offer or the way in which we deliver it? Also, how has technology changed the way you get your news and information or the type of news and information that you seek? Join us, 1-800-892-6477. Or send an email to exchange@nhpr.org. Also, The Exchange is now on Facebook, and we hope you'll go to our page and join the conversation there. And Betsy, let's talk about NHPR moving into the digital age. Lots expected from the audience, not just the information that we'll provide, but how we provide it. What are people expecting all their news sources to provide today?
This is one of the biggest challenges and opportunities for all of us in the media industry. You mentioned Facebook. In 2007, there were 34 million users on Facebook. In 2011, there are 800 million
users around the world
on Facebook. Yes. In 2007, Twitter was 1 year old. It didn't even register. Twitter has 300 million users, handling over 1.6 billion searches per day. The world has changed, and we are all running like mad trying to catch up to it. There's something else that's very, very interesting to us, and we participate in some. There's a research group based out in Detroit who's really looking at this. How are public media listeners using new media? And we've participated in that survey now for 4 years. So we get a lot of information about what's going on here in the state. But what the research is telling us is that by 2014, more people will be using as their primary device their smartphones than their desktop computers. And already social media is outpacing use of email.
So we have to be there.
So these things are just moving so much more quickly than anyone ever imagined. And I have to say that, you know, this is, I guess there are two things that I want to just put out. One is the big thing for us is that our listeners, our customers, our consumers, whatever, our consumers, let's call them consumers, news consumers, their habits have changed. They are still interested in the work that we do, but the way in which they want to access that work has changed. And our commitment, and this is something that's come out of a lot of thinking with the board, with the staff here, is we want this great content that we think we do a pretty good job of producing to reach as many people as possible on as many devices as possible.
That's expensive, though.
It's expensive. One of our big initiatives is how do we build on the digital side what we have in place on the broadcast side? We have an engineering and IT team of about four people who keep our terrestrial network operating, you know, our, you know, the network that allows you to turn on your radio and hear us. We need to build that capacity on the digital side because that is clearly where things are racing. We've actually got great engineers with crossover skills who are helping us think this through, but that's an area that we've really got to expand in. We've got an iPhone app, which we have been promoting to our listeners, and I think we have about 4,000 downloads of that app. And we are right now, some of us on staff are road testing our Droid app. So that should be coming out very shortly. And then the next frontier will be an iPad app. So we're very excited about that because that's an opportunity to really display the information in quite a beautiful way.
Let me ask you this, Betsy, and I know when I hear you speak around the state, you know, you've talked about this, the challenge, the expense, but we've got to be there. And you mentioned that our reporters are tweeting and blogging. Now, pardon me for sounding very old-fashioned, but our reporters were already busy doing their regular jobs.
Oh my gosh, yes.
And when I hear about, you know, Josh Rogers or Amy Quinton tweeting and blogging, I think, how can they possibly have time to do what they already do so well and provide that content that people want? They want that thoughtful, in-depth content and blog and tweet. How do you possibly find the time to do that?
Right. And it's more than that, too, because there is a whole different style of writing that you have to do for the web. So once upon a time, they could take the transcript of a story that they were reading for the radio and just cut and paste it onto the web. Now we're even asking them to edit those stories so that they read as, you know, sort of a print story might. So it is asking a lot. Part of it is training. Part of it is working with each of those individual reporters to find the social media tool that they like, that works for them, because not every tool is going to work for everyone. Some of our reporters might gravitate toward photo essays maybe when they're out in the field doing their story, that's something that they realize will help them enrich what they're offering to our listeners. Josh, as you said, is tweeting. That's terrific from the State House. You don't have to wait until 10 minutes to 6 to find out what happened at the State House. If Josh is there covering an important hearing and he's tweeting out messages and you're following Josh, then you're getting in real time what's happening. So that suited him. So we're asking the reporters to really focus in on, you know, Amy Quinton has a television background. So we've talked with Amy about maybe doing some video, exploring in video, which has become very central to news sites on the web. So yes, everybody has to have a lot more tools in their tool bag to do their jobs. And it's here, it's everywhere. And we can't, you know, the other big wish that we have on our, you know, sort of our strategic wish
list.
Yes, our is more reporters and editors. We want to continue to improve our service to the state. We want to have reporters who can focus on arts as a beat, who can spend more time focusing on education. I said earlier we've added capacity in business and economy coverage. That encompasses a lot in New Hampshire because education, transportation, all of these infrastructure, all business and economy issues. But, you know, we aspire to continue to build, particularly at this time when traditional media is cutting staff. AP is a fraction of what it was when I moved to the state 6 years ago.
And I remember what it was like when I started the exchange in 1995.
Yeah.
You're talking about the New Hampshire Associated Press.
Yes, and that's where we get a lot of our very local coverage that helps us put together our newscasts and so on. And you know, they've just cut back. The print media has a very traditional revenue model, and it's really been disrupted by this new technology, and the recession did not help them. And, you know, one of our responses to that is to try to partner with these media companies. We have a partnership right now with the Valley News and the Nashua Telegraph around PolitiFact, which is a fact-checking enterprise, journalism enterprise. Our reporters have been trained in their techniques. Every fact has to have two on-the-record sources, very rigorous, but we're looking at statements that candidates are making as part of our New Hampshire primary coverage.
And those are featured on Word of Mouth. It's a great segment because you do hear so much rhetoric and you think, is that really true? So
yeah, it doesn't sound true. Is it really true? And they have a sense of humor. It's rigorous. You know, they'll look at the true or mostly true or false or mostly false. But, you know, they're, if you're really, really making it up, you can get a pants on fire rating. And that, you know, that just, you know, so they keep their sense of humor about it, but they really are looking at what these candidates are saying and trying to help those of us who are going to go into the voting booth, you know, be able to get our bearings and sort through, which is so the role of public radio. We help you sort of sort through all this information so you're empowered to make good decisions.
Let's sort through a couple phone calls
okay,
and emails,
great.
Betsy.
Great.
Our number 1-800-892-6477. The email is exchange@nhpr.org. Again, 1-800-892-NHPR. And let's go first to Anne in New London, Betsy. Hi, Anne. You're on the air with Betsy Gardella. Welcome.
Thank you, and it's great hearing about all the wonderful things NHPR is doing. I just want to put in a little plug for the Newport and Claremont area. I commute to Claremont every day, and I have to switch to VPR when I get to the other side of Sunapee because NHPR no longer comes in, and that happens to me on three different cars. So
wow.
Yeah, there's just no NHPR reception in the Newport-Claremont area. So.
Oh, Anne, anything else you want to say while you're here? Okay, just about that. A shout-out for the programming, but also the difficulty, and you
right.
mentioned that.
Yeah, and Claremont is one of those, it's one of those parts of the state where our signal just does not reach. And I have to say, you know, I think we're very fortunate in New Hampshire that we have Vermont coming in on the western side of the state, and we get Maine on the east, and in some parts of the state we get the Boston stations, or even Albany comes in, and we are very well served. That does not mean that we don't have a commitment to bring New Hampshire news to these communities. We have a very short list of priority communities that we want to identify signals in so that we can bring our service there. But we do work with the other New England stations, and we believe that a rising tide lifts all boats, that the more public radio there is in a region, the more people will listen. And but Claremont has a soft spot in our heart, and that's an area we are focusing on.
All right, Sue. So stay tuned for perhaps more news on that. And I hope you heard earlier Betsy say about the tremendous challenges in broadcasting to a bumpy state like New Hampshire, but it's good to hear Claremont's a priority. Here's a comment from Facebook that we received this morning. Stephen said, when will the Lakes region finally get good reception? The rest of the state seems covered already. So that's another concern that we hear about.
And, you know, there was an auction for the first time, I think, in about a decade for licenses, and we applied for several licenses in the Lakes region. And it's done by a point system, and we did not come in first, and that's the way it works. So we have a translator in Plymouth. The WEVO signal gets into some parts of the Lakes region, particularly when you're in your car. That's not much comfort for people who like to listen in their kitchen as I do, but that is another area of the state that is on our list. And I might as well just throw in the other two priority areas since the signal questions have come up. We're looking to strengthen our signal on the seacoast. And we also have a less than perfect signal in the Upper Valley. We have a pretty good signal in Hanover, but in downtown there are some pockets that don't get good reception. We have many friends and listeners at Kendall, which is right there on Lime Road, and some parts of the building get it, other parts don't.
Really? Kendall's a retirement community
Hanover. And lots of just fabulous public radio listeners over there. We just visited there a couple of weeks ago. So we know from listeners kind of where the rough spots are, and we are it's the job of Scott McPherson, who's our VP for operations and finance, to work with signal brokers and so that we are notified whenever transmitters come on the market.
It's a fascinating process.
It
really
is. It is.
All right. Well, thanks for that call, Sue. Again, our number 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Excuse me, that was Ann. We're gonna go to Sue now and Lee. Hi, Sue, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hi. I just wanted to thank NHPR for the terrific investigative reporting during the last campaign in 2010, the congressional campaign, how you went after the mystery money, the $355,000 Frank Ginta couldn't explain and never did explain, and how you were really the only outlet that covered that and investigated it thoroughly. In fact, so thoroughly that the organization called CRU, Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington, used it when they declared Mr. Ginta to be one of the 14 most corrupt legislators in Washington.
So that coverage done by John Greenberg, Sue.
Yeah.
Right. And, you know, investigative journalism, kind of a dying art. Nobody has the resources to do it anymore.
It's expensive. It takes time. And it's precisely why a project like State Impact was so fabulous for us, because the purpose of that reporter position is to be to do investigative journalism, to do enterprise reporting, to have the time to do the stories that are really going to make a difference. And one of the beauty parts of that particular opportunity is that our reporters here are edited by Ken Rudin in Washington. And it's very important for reporters to work with a variety of editors. It really helps them, you know, keep their stories fresh, and they have editors asking them questions that maybe their daily editor, just for whatever reason, you know, maybe takes for granted or doesn't notice anymore. Who knows? But that's a really important part of journalism, is having lots of different people coming in and talking with you about your stories and working on the stories. And State Impact was really set up to help stations make a difference in their communities.
How will news organizations, including this one, Betsy, meet the demands of the audience, though? I mean, you have Sue, who loves the investigative reporting, and that's important, obviously.
Right.
And yet the audience also wants those up-to-the-minute updates from the State House, the tweets from Josh or whatever.
Right.
How can you possibly bring these two worlds together and do it all? There's only 24 hours in a day.
Yeah, I know. I think that it is that it has to start with a state of mind. It has to start with an appreciation for the fact that things are moving so quickly that it's not about skills building as much as it is about having a sense of excitement about learning and change, which is so consistent with what we think about public radio. Public radio listeners are forever curious. They want to know what's going to happen next. It's word of mouth. It's all about trends, ideas, different ways of looking at things. And when we talk about the culture of NHPR, whether we're talking about the newsroom or we're talking about our membership operation or we're talking about the shows, we talk about how do we develop a culture where we're actually embracing change. And if we have that mindset, we'll be looking for the next new thing. We'll be more inclined to experiment and discover what really suits our personalities and styles. By trying things, we'll get feedback from our listeners so that listeners can tell us what they value. We can't be everything to all people, but we can try. And we have to be multi-platform. There's no turning away from that. So we're doing the best that we can. We've crafted something that we call the Main Street Media Initiative, which is a little mini fundraising campaign that will allow us to, if we're successful in funding it, add more staff for local, for the shows and for the newsroom, because local is what distinguishes us. And build the digital side so that we're able to distribute that local content, as I said before, on as many platforms as possible.
So now we're moving away from 2011 toward that wish list for 2012 that I wanted to ask you about. So we'll talk about that after a break. Also, a couple quick questions about National Public Radio, given that you're on the board at NPR. Stay with us.
The brothers placed their hands together and held each other tightly. For the first time in years, peace rested within the walls of their home.
Greetings, I'm Madafo. Join me for a celebration of Kwanzaa on A Season's Griot from PRI, Public Radio International.
New Year's Eve at 4 p.m. on NHPR. For a complete list of our holiday programs, visit nhpr.org.
Support for NHPR comes from you, our members, from the McLean Law Firm, supporting the Capital Region Food Program, working to reduce hunger in the greater Concord area, online at mclane.com. And from Higgins Wood Floors, provider and installer of home healthy hardwoods and bamboo flooring from well-managed forests, online at higginswoodfloors.com. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we're sitting down with NHPR President and CEO Betsy Gardella. Join us with your questions and comments. Where would you like to see this radio station go in the year ahead? What are some of the changes that you've heard over the past year, and what do you think? It's your chance to talk to the president of this radio news service that you listen to every day. 1-800-892-6477 is our number. 1-800-892-NHPR, or send us a short email, the address exchange@nhpr.org. I want to ask you, Betsy, real quickly before we go back to our callers and emails about National Public Radio. Its programming is a huge part of what we offer here, obviously. And there's a new president at NPR, Gary Nell. How is Mr. Nell going to manage this ship, right the ship, if I could put it that way? As you well know, he comes to NPR after 2 years of turmoil, starting with the Juan Williams issue, the resignation of top news officials, a top fundraiser, President Vivian Schiller. I mean, it's been some real just not good headlines for NPR lately.
No.
What can Mr. Nell do as he steps into this new role?
Well, let me back up just a little bit and say that, yes, from October of 2010 through, I guess, March of 2011, NPR was in the news in not a good way. And when the board, with, I have to say, some considerable sadness, accepted the resignation of Vivian Schiller. We had a succession plan in place, and Joyce Slocum, who was the general counsel at NPR, assumed the role of interim president, and she has been fantastic. She instituted a new rule, and it's the let's not do anything stupid rule. And she, I mean, with a sense of humor, she's a Texan, she's super smart, and really earned the respect of that staff. So Gary actually came in to a much more stable NPR than I think many of us might have imagined. The news coverage did not miss a beat. Fundraising remained strong. So he's inherited an organization that has stabilized and is very anxious for leadership. A few words about Gary. He's a seasoned manager. He was at Sesame Workshop for 20 years. A fantastic brand, also one that has been going through a lot of change, similar change, a lot of competition for children's educational programming. And he's been so resourceful in making sure that Sesame Workshop is at the top of the list nationally and internationally. He has great fundraising skills. He's very down to earth, very direct, has a great sense of humor, which always helps. He has good relationships on the Hill, both sides of the aisle. And we've all been very impressed with him. So we're excited to work with him. Our first board meeting with Gary is in February. So we're looking forward to that and seeing what the differences in his leadership will be. He's bringing to us a plan for how he wants to kind of manage the network in the short term and what kinds of initiatives he's going to be focusing on in his first 100 days.
Well, since you mentioned Capitol Hill, just real quickly, Betsy, and then we'll go back to our callers and emailers. During the debate over this in Congress this past year, many lawmakers asked, once again, why does public media deserve taxpayer dollars? And in this day and age, when many stations like New Hampshire Public Radio have found other sources of funding, we do a good job with our underwriting and our partnerships. We seem to be doing pretty well, especially given the economy. Make the case, Betsy, that public media still deserves taxpayer support.
Okay. First of all, we're one of many countries that receives federal support. The smallest per taxpayer percentage of support, but many countries do. And a free press is core to a strong democracy, and it sounds like a platitude, but if you think about the countries that are repressive and you understand how easy it is for government to take, there's a line that we walk that we're very committed to this independent reporting. But something that our listeners, I'm sure, don't know or hadn't really thought about is that the funding that we get from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting is way more than the community service grant that we get. The Corporation for Public Broadcasting pays for all the music rights for public broadcasting. It is the venture capital fund for public broadcasting. New show development, digital innovations come from investments from CPB. And they cover the costs of the satellite interconnect system. So if CPB went away, New Hampshire Public Radio would not only lose about $350,000 in unrestricted support, but that amount would be doubled because we would have to cover our portion of those other costs. So it would make the net effect on us about $750,000. Very difficult for us to make up. The other piece of the way that we're funded through the government is the two-year funding cycle, which means that we can cover the government without our funding being on the line on a year-to-year basis. So that forward funding is very key to the firewall that we have between the federal government and the public radio system.
Well, and speaking of funding, here's an email that we just got from Tana, who says, I'm a longtime NHPR listener and have been long frustrated by NHPR's fund drives. Why can't NHPR utilize Maine's model of a one-day drive? I live on the seacoast and thus listen to MPBN, that's Maine Public Broadcasting Network, and NHPR. And I'm always so impressed by Maine's fundraising methods. Their last one-day drive was so effective that when I called to make my contribution at 4:30, I was turned away because the drive had ended at 4 p.m. What do you think about this issue? I hear it a lot when I go out into the community too, Betsy. Too much fundraising on the air.
I will have to talk to our friends at Maine and see how many one-day drives they do. I think that the shorter drives are really a terrific technique, and many stations have used them over time. What we know from our experience is that no single technique works over and over again. So we do try to mix it up, but that is our plan. We just completed a December drive, and that was a three-day drive. And that was just, we wanted to give listeners who really think about their giving at year-end, which so many Americans do, we wanted to give our listeners the opportunity to contribute then, but that was a short drive. In the past, we've done a January drive, and we do not plan to do a January drive this year. So we're very conscious of the number of days that we're on air, and those one-day drives can be really wonderful. And I think I'll take the caller up on this idea and talk to my fund drive team about it.
Thanks again for that email. The address is exchange@nhpr.org. The number is 1-800-892-6477. Here's David in Moultonboro. Hi, David. Thanks for hanging on. You're on the air.
Hi, Laura. Hi, Betsy. I've been a very long-time listener, and for a great while lived on the seacoast like your last caller, and was able to listen to a lot of the public radio from Maine and all of the stations in the Boston market as well. And I'm mostly calling to compliment you guys as an organization because I can feel the struggle that you guys have of trying to stay relevant and current in terms of presentation of material and you know, following the latest trends and things like that with the noontime shows that have been developed over the last 4 or 5 years or whatever. And I think you guys, and particularly Laura, I think you've done just a stellar job for all these years. And but the one thing that I hope you'll keep your eye on the target, like you seem to be doing, and I hope it will maintain this way, is that you'll focus on staying unique and not being afraid to be unique, and not necessarily always following the trends. Some of the Boston shows tend to be a little more PM magazine, if I don't know if anybody remembers that TV show from a long time ago, but a little more salacious and a lot more hip. And not that hip isn't cool, isn't good, but it can get distracting.
I hear your point, David. Yeah, as we try and stay current and relevant, let's not just become like everybody else. I mean, we are who we are.
Right. No, we talk about that a lot. And when we're working on programming initiatives, we go back to our core values in public radio. You know, and those qualities of craft are so important to us. One of the things that I love about word of mouth is The care they give to the music selections that they use coming in and out of their segments. That's a, you know, magazine style show, so there are multiple segments. It's a very different mission than something like The Exchange, which really takes a big topic and spends a full hour delving into it. So, you know, by having, you know, different local programs that all reflect the values, but touch on different topics in different ways with the understanding that, you know, we're sort of at this great time where we're really interested in making sure that all of those younger people, the Gen Xers and the millennials who have grown up in the backseat listening to public radio, find us and continue to listen to us. And we're very heartened when we talk to younger people around the state that they listen to this programming. They may not own radios, but they're listening to what we do. And what we also know about the baby boomers, who are the core of our audience, is that baby boomers are forever young, and they want to know these new ideas and trends and think about things differently. And they're willing to look at ideas and listen to music that, you know, they might not pick up on their own. And even if it's just to make a connection to their child, you know, I heard that band you've been talking about, or that author you love, Neil Gaiman, he was here in New Hampshire. So there are, we're just, the demographics kind of work in our favor. There's a wonderful synergy right now between the generations, and we really keep that in mind as we're developing programming. I thank you so much for your kind words also.
Well, and something that you appreciate as the mother of a 19-year-old daughter.
Absolutely.
She's kind of keeping you in that world.
She does.
So.
She does.
Thanks a lot for that, David. Here's another email. This person didn't leave a name, but says, I like to listen to The Exchange, but the steady interruptions for promos, etc., is really frustrating. In the middle of an interesting discussion, there is a halt for some inane intro music that seems... Then a seemingly mindless description of goodies to come on some later program. I usually listen all morning, but I'm finding myself turning to Vermont for some uninterrupted classical music. I am used to the long and too frequent fun drives, but the slow erosion of very fine interviews sends me up a wall. We did change the format of The Exchange, gosh, about 5 or 6 years ago. We used to take one break at 9:30. Mm-hmm. Now we take two, one at 9:20 and one at 9:40. To allow for promotion of what's coming up,
right?
Underwriting, because we need to make money. But here's a listener who says, look, you're interrupting some good stuff.
You know, it's the breaks are 60 seconds, correct? So it's 2 minutes. You know, if you think about a commercial station, you get 22 minutes of commercial breaks in an hour. I hear you, and I don't know. I'm not a show producer, and you know, some producers talk about floating clocks, and I know that Laura tries so hard to find the right moment for the break in the conversation with her guests. But you know, I think it's great feedback, and we're always looking to improve the way we present what we do, because radio is an experience for you as a listener, and when you have pet peeves and it disrupts your experience, we do need to hear about it. And so it's something we'll put on our list, and the next time we put our heads together, it's certainly something that we can look at. Thank you.
Well, and I understand that you don't want to take a break, and I want to tell this person I appreciate it too. I'm doing a great interview with a presidential candidate, and then I have to stop, and then during the break maybe there's an underwriter or so forth, but... you know, it costs money to turn the lights on here.
Right.
And we've got to raise the money somehow. So I hope that helps you, you who emailed in. You know, Betsy, we've heard from a lot of listeners this hour, a lot more calls and emails that we didn't get to. What are you doing in 2012 to cast a wider net so that we can get input from a broader community than perhaps we do now?
Oh, that's a perfect question. One of the things that we're really excited about is the expansion of our community advisory board. Perhaps all of our listeners don't know what that is, but as a community licensee, that means that we're an independently licensed public radio station by the FCC. We are required to have a community advisory board, and always have. They meet regularly. It's a small group of listeners from around the state. Geographic diversity is really important with a community advisory board. But unlike our board of directors, whose job is fiduciary and, you know, with all the compliance and, you know, the sort of the business part, the community advisory board is there to give us feedback on our programming and our policy decisions. And we are expanding that group to, I think we have about 10 people on our community advisory board right now, and we're expanding it to 40 people.
That's a lot.
It's a lot. What we're going to ask of these folks is that they commit to us not 2 full days a year, but from, let's say, 8 o'clock in the morning to maybe 2 in the afternoon. Twice a year, one of the meetings will be in Concord. One will be somewhere else. That second meeting will rotate. We'll feed you well, and we'll ask you to come in prepared. We'll give you homework assignments so that we can make the time really productive. But, for example, if we're piloting a new program, you might listen to that program in advance, a little advanced screening, and be able to come in and give us feedback. Or if there's a direction we want to take or some programming changes we're contemplating, it would give this group a chance to inform us. So if anyone who's listening has an interest, they could email me directly, bgardella@nhpr.org, and very soon we will have an online enrollment form for that.
For the new community advisory board.
The new community advisory board.
All right. Well, Betsy, thank you for being here. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year.
Thank you. Same to you, Laura, and to all of our listeners. Thank you so much for your support. Every single time you turn on the radio, we appreciate you and do the best we can. Have a wonderful holiday and New Year.
That's Betsy Gardella, President and CEO of New Hampshire Public Radio. The Exchange is a production of NHPR. The engineer today is Craig Martin. Our producer is Ellen Grimm. Our volunteer is Priscilla Malcolm. Our intern is Ryan Lassard. We're also now on Facebook. Join our page to continue the conversation. Learn more about what The Exchange is planning every day. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. The Exchange's executive producer is Keith Shields. And I'm Laura Kanoy.